Smooth, Adam. Smooth. That's very smooth.
This podcast is a proud member of the Pride 48 Bear. Podcasting Network. Check out more great shows at pride48.com.
Boo! Yeah.
Okay, now I have a checklist for after the show.
Oh, great. I have stopped my recording.
Stop the recording of audio. I can stop the Zoom recording.
You can take us off of YouTube.
Recording stopped.
Zoom recording. I can go off of
YouTube.
I can stop the recording. I can go...
You know what, Kathy Marshall, though, I think I talked about this when I was talking about the Beach Boys, which were here for the Food and Wine Festival, but the Beach Boys, there's only one original Beach Boy still performing, but it's a full band, but they hired that band because those people sound the most like the Beach Boys on the record. So it's like a really good cover band. So it was a really great concert because these people were hired specifically because they could sound like the Beach Boys records live. Right. So, it was a great, and John Stamos, played drums for them. Uncle Jesse.
Oh, who, when, who, how, where?
This was at Epcot, this past year.
Oh, okay. This Flower and Garden or the last Flower and Garden?
No, it was the Food and Wine Festival.
Or the Food and Wine. Yeah. This one or last one?
This past one. We talked about it just this past
year. Oh, because Flower and Garden is going right now, yes. But it was the Food and Wine.
Yes.
Okay. Which is
and
different.
Yes, Food and Wine starts here.
It's confusing because the Flower and Garden, they also have food.
Yeah, exactly. But the food that they serve at Flower and Garden is light springtime food. So lots of citrus things, lots of lighter stuff. When they do Food and Wine... They do a mixture. They do more heavier, they'll do like fillets and, beef tips and other things. Like they'll do a heartier selections and also a way bigger wine and a way bigger beer selection. So there's red wines and white wines at almost every place. There's also, stouts available throughout and IPAs and, ciders and stuff.
So
like that,
normally, so. Epcot yes. has every country.
Yes,
has some sort of food stall.
Yes,
that will have their food in it.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. But, so even if they weren't doing the special things that they're doing during the festivals.
Oh no, those stalls.
They have
no those
food
stalls. No those
markets
stalls,
or yeah, whatever you want to call them.
Those stalls aren't there. So then during normal Epcot, you just have the restaurants. And the food carts. So like, yeah, in Canada, there's maple popcorn and, you can get Molson beer and stuff. In the UK, there's a fish and chips shop, but there's also a restaurant, right? An English restaurant. In France, there's that place that we ate, the kind of cafeteria place. That's always there. The ice cream store in France is always there.
And you were not impressed.
I was not.
With that place.
I was not. But yeah, I feel like I regret not doing the pear. Like one of the selections is like a pear and blue cheese on a baguette. I wish I would have done that. Instead of,
I don't remember. I got some kind of ham and cheese croissant that they warmed up and it was all right. I mean, it wasn't bad. The croissant was flaky.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Do you want to hear the scuttlebutt, the tea?
Yeah.
So Zach has, his running friends, that do all these races with him. So Dwayne and, Dwayne's roommate, Ryan, and occasionally Ryan's boyfriend. And then their other friends, that are younger, than me and Zach, like they're in their early 30s, whatever, late 20s, early 30s. And there's one of them and his name is Scott. And he is a snotty ass twink, right? He's just a snot. He's one of those, he's, if you don't have a 6 minute a mile pace, then, you suck, right? He's just, whatever. He wins a lot of races. And he went to Dollywood. And at Dollywood, he won the 5K. And then after that, when he ran, you know, he did the 10K after because he was doing the challenge. So 10K after, he won the 10K also. He came in first for both of these. And just previously in the springtime surprise weekend, he did the challenge there and he came in like second in the 5K and, you know, third in the 10K and in like seventh in the 10 miler or stuff. So the day of the half marathon, now remember, he's a snotty little twink. He barely tolerates, you know, the only reason he's even tolerating being around me is just because I'm with their running group. Like I'm standing around, right? Is like, just the type, right? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, they're yes, too precious.
I know what you mean.
So there's no love lost here. No love lost here with Scott. But on the half marathon day, he finished the half marathon in an hour and 19. A 6 minute pace, essentially, and was declared the winner. There was, the confetti. There was the announcement. There was, all the stuff. The next closest runner was 4 minutes behind. No, 5 minutes behind. So, they had the rest of their things. So, this was known, right, until. Later in the day later because Zach finished in like 2 hours or something. So by the time Zach finished, it had changed. Like they declared they did the little ceremony for the first, second and third place person. And Scott was not called up. He was not the first place. These were three people that were not, none of them were Scott. And so I looked at the official result app and Scott had come in 99,999th place. Like he basically, they had changed his position to 99999, which means that you're disqualified. And, but because his time was still the fastest, he was literally at the top of the list. So here he is at the top of the list for everyone to see that he's been disqualified, from this race. So I'm like,
do we know why?
Well, we didn't know why. Right. So, Dwayne finished much later. Dwayne finished at like 2 hours and a half. Cause Dwayne decided to ride the roller coasters cause they opened some of the roller coasters during the half marathon. So if you're on the course, you can ride the roller coasters. So he came in at like 2.5. By the way, this is way faster. I would not finish a half marathon. My half marathon finish time was 3 hours. So, I mean, they're like with him riding roller coasters, you know, he finished and.
Yeah, I think Mark does 2 hours.
Yeah, Zach does a little under 2 hours, right? So, and Mark probably does the same. Anyway, the what we later found out. Now, remember, this is the inaugural weekend. This race has never happened before. So on the half marathon day, you couldn't just run around the parking lot in both of the theme parks because that's only 6.2 miles, right? You need another 7 miles or so. So they had several places that were kind of out and back along highways, along, you know, roads and stuff that they had closed off. And so there was roads, but there was no lighting along these roads. This was 5 a.m. Long before the sun came up. So if you didn't have a headlamp or a flashlight, there were some very dark areas that you were running through. They did not have a guide. Usually there is a bike guide at the very front of the pack that knows the course, that keeps the runners on the course, because, you know, people follow the person in front of them. So if one person goes in the wrong way, then everyone, so they're riding ahead of it. They did not have that. So what they are claiming is that there was a turnaround section or an offshoot section. And they're claiming that Scott didn't run because a race person standing there pointed him in a different direction. So it was not.
Oh, so it was their fault.
It was their fault. His. Completely their fault. Completely oh. their fault.
Well, what do you do? Because he still didn't win because he missed a whole section of the race.
Then in that case, so, if it's their fault, you give him a time penalty. So it's like, if that was a half mile, you would have said, okay, based on your pace, then we're going to add in more time. He still would have been first because he was 5 minutes ahead of the last pretty. He runs a 6 minute mile. So if it was a half mile section that they're talking about, that's 3 minutes. It's like, that's 3 minutes off of his run. So it's like, even with a 3 minute penalty. So I take it
he was unhappy about this?
I mean, I guess, like, again, snotty twink, we found out through other sources that it was, all I was trying to say is I still felt bad for him, even though I think he's an asshole. I still felt bad for him. I mean, there's no prize money involved and everything, but to me, it's just to have my name at the top of the list with an obvious disqualification next to it, and it wasn't my fault. That feels like, you know, slapping me in the face. That feels like, you know, take my name off your fucking list, right? It's like, don't, or put me at the bottom, whatever. You have me at the top of the list. Every single person that looks at this for their results sees me as disqualified, and it's not my fault. So they're claiming, their whole defense is that they're going by Atlanta rules, which means that ultimately the runner is responsible for knowing the course. But the bullshit thing is that no one knows that course because it was the very first time that course ever existed. And the maps that they gave us were impossible to figure out. Like, you would zoom in as far as it would go and you still couldn't figure out. It's like, are they going around? Wait, do they turn? It was like, it was such a confusing course to try to look at on a map.
Well, so they'll learn, and theoretically it'll get better every year.
I still feel bad for the kid that, he got his, it's like it wasn't even his fault. Like, if it was something he did, then I would have been, ha ha, you know, snot nose, whatever. But it's like, that sucks. That sucks if it's, you know, something.
It does suck. It sucks.
Anyway, that's the tea, Adam. That was the tea that I wanted to spill there.
Well, cool.
You know, this little vape thing that you got, the
have
one.
Have you been using that or?
Yeah, I've been using that one.
I like the screen on the front of it.
Yeah, I like the screen.
It's very techy.
So I ordered another one of these today because this one's almost out. And I ordered another one today and I drove up there. And they've just recently replaced our ATM cards. And so I'm almost all the way up to the dispensary, which is about 20 minutes up the road. And I pull into the Publix to get some cash out of the ATM. And then I have like,
so
this,
do they only take cash and not debit cards or
you can
credit
do,
cards?
You can
or?
Do debit cards, but there's a fee both ways. Like that's an additional $6. And there's a Publix right on the way that has no fee. So it's just easier to get cash out of Publix. Regardless, you can use your debit card. You can use something that's tied to your bank account. There's a couple of apps that tie to your bank account, and then you can use cash, right? So you're not allowed to put it on credit because the federal classifications and stuff, which hopefully might change now that medical marijuana is reclassified as a Schedule 3 drug. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, so I get up and I get there, and I had this vague memory of, like, I think I tried to get cash out in Dollywood and my PIN wasn't working because I set the PIN for this when we got the card, but this would be the first time that I'd used it. And so the PIN's not working. And I'm having these thoughts as I go up to Publix and I put in my PIN. I've had the same PIN for the last decade. So I put in my PIN and, it's like, go through the transaction. It's like, nope, wrong PIN. And I'm just like, fuck, I don't know what to do. It's like, there's no app or anything that's going to tell me what it is, right? It's the bank doesn't know what it is.
Well, here's what you do. You go into a store.
Yeah.
And you buy something.
Aha, aha. So,
where they will let you get cash back.
So hence these blue moons or high noons that I bought at Publix. And got up to the thing. And when I tapped to pay, there was no option to get cash back. And so I was just like, fuck. So basically, I have to go down to the bank tomorrow morning and have them. I did not pick up my order at the dispensary.
We don't, as far as I know, we don't have any fancy ones like that one. We just have these throwaway batteries and then these cartridges. We have the cartridges and the little batteries that charge via USB-C or whatever. So that's all I've, at least that's all I've seen at my local place.
Yeah.
Although there are more than one place, I guess I could shop around a little bit.
At least on medical. But
the one I go to is on the state line. So it's the closest one.
Usually your first visit to any dispensary, they usually have like a special. So it's like your first visit there will be like 60% off or something.
But there is a place right across the street from it. So I could try that place too.
Yeah, this is, I think this is out. This one's not good.
So what's happening with James Tastes Like Burning?
Have you, do you follow him on Blue Sky?
All I know is that I got a very nasty response.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. It had
AI in it, and it was an AI image or something, or some image that had made it was sure, yeah. And his snotty comment was like, we could just not use AI to do it, or something like that. Yeah. He has now, like, all he posts is anti AI stuff.
You think he lost his job to AI or something?
I don't know. Anti-AI stuff and weather and storm warnings. Like, his entire Blue Sky feed is... But he's got... I don't want to say unhinged, because I feel like there's a lot of connotations to that. Like, I don't think he's violent or anything like that. But I do think that he's definitely has a very, very... strong opinion against AI. And so the question that I had, the reason that he's on the Trello here is because I'm wondering if we should ask him to come on the show just in an interview section, because I would love to understand where that comes from. Like, where is this hatred coming from, right?
Well, I mean, you know me. I'm not a real big fan of interviews, but if you want to interview him, I'm willing to sit here and let you interview him. But
I'm trying to find...
It's going to be annoying, though, because you and I have a completely different viewpoint. And so to listen to someone with that viewpoint talk for however long we do it... I don't know. It's going to be annoying, is for lack of a better term.
Why would it be
annoying? I don't know. Just grating to hear. I don't know. I guess I don't like to hear dissenting opinions. I'm not much of a debater, Daniel.
I'm trying to find, like, he's deleted a lot of these posts, but he is a very prolific poster. And retweeter. But it was just like
now. Is he the high, more high pitched one, or is he the lower pitched one?
He's the lower register
on the show.
He is the lower register voice.
The lower register.
I don't know what his, but he posts against AI a lot, like crazy a lot. Like I get people don't like AI, and you know, or they're scared or they're worried or whatever. I get that. That's valid. And, you know, but I don't get the, every single thing has to be bad. Every single thing has to be, you know, and you forget how big AI is, right? Like, John Oliver just did a piece on Last Week Tonight about AI chatbots or AI chats. And most of them were not, most of them were just smaller companies that have like gimmicky little chatbots, you know, like you can create a persona and chat with it, or, you know, you can have your online companion and stuff like that. There was no, you know, they weren't talking about Gemini or OpenAI or Claude, like any of the big three. They weren't talking about them as being dangerous chatbots. They were just talking about these smaller ones where they have no guardrails on them and stuff. And that's
fair. Or the ones that are specifically for boyfriends or girlfriends that like where you're going there to, you know, that can be detrimental to your health.
It can also ripe to scam people and stuff like that. So yeah, of course. And it's like, and no one disagrees with that. No, there's not a single fucking person that disagrees with that. Those things are bad. But then they conflate it in with AI is bad and generative AI is bad and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, generative AI isn't just chats. That's like a really, it's a small piece of it, right? It's like generative AI are, you know, thousands of agents, of agentic agents doing, you know, work, like doing tasks that has nothing to do with them generating sentences or, you know, making artwork or whatever. They're literally doing very useful things. They're scanning through emails and summarizing them and making determinations on whether it's crap or whether it's something you should pay attention to. There's agents that are writing code. There's agents that are writing tests for that code. There's other agents that are orchestrating those agents. It's like there's like a lot of busy little beaver things. AI is really big. So like there are obviously areas of it that you can critique, but to then say all of it is crap is a bit much. I did see something today in the Atlantic, and they were talking about the AI bubble, which, I mean, we've all heard about the AI bubble and, you know, just like the dot-com bubble or whatever, there's going to come a point where investors no longer want to invest, and the thing that's propping up the economy right now will collapse, and, you know, stocks will make a correction, as they say. And because all these tech stocks are a good portion of the S&P 500, then people that have S&P 500 investments, aka a lot of people, 401ks, will also take a tumble. And that's...
let's hope it's not this year.
But the interesting thing about this article was the accepted inevitability of the fact that this bubble is going to pop, because... revenues are actually up. Anthropic, which was not supposed to be profitable until 2028, is getting close to actually breaking even this year. And that's, you know, if trends continue or whatever, but that's way ahead of schedule. Like, it's like it was supposed to still be losing money for another year or so. So OpenAI also has increased revenues. Like, it may be insaneful, you know, as insanely useful as it is, that may be it's, you know, that it can escape the bubble, because it's like, oh yeah, actually, no, this is insanely useful. Like, this really is worth it.
I did see a headline today. I didn't read the article, but I saw a headline that said, the bills now coming due for a lot of the data center, the data, you know, for all of these AI companies, and that it's going to have an impact, like how much they're having to pay.
Yeah.
They're losing money on every chat that we do.
They're losing money overall, but that's because they're building these new data centers. And it's like, they're not losing money because of our, if they stopped building and just service the clients they have, they would be profitable. But that profit would not go anywhere towards servicing the debt that they already have. They need to grow to do that. So it's a case of they make plenty of money for what they have, but they're also actively expanding, when that's where they're taking on the debt, is in the active expansion part. So that's what.
But apparently Google just came up with an algorithm that cuts the amount of memory usage. It's for
called Turbo Quant, and we talked about it.
Oh, did we?
We did. When
I just read an article today.
It came out several weeks ago, but yes, Turbo Quant is a maybe I was talking to my nephew about it.
Yeah, probably.
Did you ever see Silicon Valley?
Yes,
the HBO show.
Not all of it. I saw some episodes.
Okay. But the premise of Silicon Valley is that they discovered an algorithm to compress files like 10 times better than anything else out there, which would make all of these, you know, if you can compress things 10 times smaller, then you can send more of it, right? So then you could have streaming 4K video on a mobile connection. You could have, like, it was like the implications are, you know, staggering to have this. So what TurboQuant is it is a new compression algorithm that literally uses a 3D compression cubic kind of algorithm. But we are able to compress these large language models 4 times more than we were before without loss of parameters. So in the past, in order to make an LLM smaller to run on smaller hardware, you would give up parameters, right? So it wouldn't have as many parameters, as many training sets, right, that make it up. So you're shaving off pieces of its brain, right, to make it fit in a smaller memory footprint. What this allows them to do is to release Gemma 4, which is their, you know, Gemini Flash, but this is the open weights version of it, so you can run it on your own hardware. And it only takes up 7 gigs of memory because of TurboQuant. So it normally that would have taken up 32 gigs of RAM. But because of TurboQuant, it only requires 7. So it's a crazy efficiency. Now, remember, Google has their own chips. And when you say that all these AI companies are losing money, Google is not. Google is still profitable. Google's, losses in AI research are offset by their ad business. But Google isn't spending trillions of dollars with NVIDIA to buy their chips because Google has their own chips. Like, Google designed their own chips. So Google data centers run on their own chips. So Gemini doesn't use CUDA cores. Gemini uses tensors. So you have Google owns the chip fab. So in any kind of scarcity of chips, Google has their own fabs. They have their own chips. They don't have to compete with other people to get those chips because they're their chips. The same thing, they have an existing very profitable business, so they can take more time to do things and they can stand to lose more money because they're still being profitable from their primary business. So they're not in the, like, OpenAI is completely underwater. Like, OpenAI is solidly in debt, as is Anthropic, right? Gemini is not. You end up with, integrated platforms, right? Gemini integrates with all of your Google services, right? Including YouTube, Gmail, Google Drive, Google Keep, Google Calendar, Google Meet, like all of the, anything in the Google ecosystem, Gemini can instantly tie into, so much so that you can ask Gemini to do a cartoon rendering of your cat. And it will go into Photos, find a picture of your cat, and then use that as the basis to make the cartoon thing. It's like it is, you know, tied into its ecosystem. So I don't even remember what my point was here, but the bubble thing. So it's like it could very well be, you know, it's not like we have 5 or 6 competitors, right? There are essentially 3. There's essentially 3 U.S. frontier model competitors. And that's Google, Anthropic, and OpenAI. Everybody else is a derivative of that, right? Copilot is based off of OpenAI. Other places use all of them or some of them. There are the Chinese models. Like, in fact, the one that was just released today, Mistral, I think is Mistral, 4.5 or something, is as good at coding as Codex is from Codex 5.4. So not the latest Codex, but the one right before it, which was astounding, which means that there's now an open weights model that you can run on your own machine that is just as good at writing code as the last Codex model. And that was pretty fucking good, right? So that it means you don't have to worry about running out of tokens or whatever. It just runs on the electricity on your machine, right? It's like that's the thing there. But I feel like we're in a very exciting place in AI right now because
I tried Claude Design. It's pretty cool.
I don't know if you've tried Claude Design. I haven't because
the new images on ChatGPT have gotten much better.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of images and stuff. I do a lot of coding, but yeah. I don't really do a lot. I do throwaway images, like jokey images or whatever, but I use Gemini for that because I have Gemini Pro, so, and I'm in that ecosystem. But yeah, the design stuff, it's like it still to me is, unless you're doing a web app or like a web page or something. He's really good at designing web pages.
I think it would be good if you were doing a web page and you said you had Claude design the web page, and then you either pulled it into Claude Code or you pulled it over into Codex.
Yeah.
And you said, hey, create this exact
right. I think page the problem
with this design.
Right. The problem there is that I use a CSS framework, so I just want it to use the within that I wanted to, and it's not good enough to do that yet. So, but that's because I'm not going to sit around and write mobile first, like CSS divisions and stuff like that. Right. So I use a CSS framework so that my apps at work can run on mobile or on, you know, so they'll format correctly on mobile or PC.
Right.
And I don't want to give that up. So I don't really use this. I played with them some, but it's like, I'm really annoyed with the billing stuff that's going on with Anthropic. Just that they've been like lowering the number of, like, it's not transparent how many credits you have, like how many tokens you can use within a given period. That's not transparent, but it's like, you know, they just seem like they're going faster now for not using the latest models, like not even using the latest models. Like I can't get through an entire coding session with Claude before it runs out of tokens. And that sucks.
I haven't experienced that with Codex, but your coding sessions might be longer than mine.
Yeah.
I would just go an hour or two.
Right.
Or
no,
three.
I'm trying to finish an entire,
you're trying to do a whole work day.
Yeah. And it's like, it's stupid because then you have to wait 3 hours or whatever, because it's 5 hour window. So let's say you work for 2 hours, ran out of token, and then you got to sit there and wait for 3 hours before you can do it again, right? But then they have other, and now they have separate limits for Claude Design, and they have, if you are try to use it with something they don't like if you try to use it with OpenClaw or anything like that, they'll API bill you, like it won't come off here, like without telling you, they'll API bill you.
Well, you have to have a balance in the API.
Yeah, but I have a balance in there in case I go, because I don't want to cut my session. I want to finish the damn program, right? So it's like, I mean, it's just a balance. It's just $20 that's sitting there. It's been sitting there for forever, right? But yeah, I think I'm going to go back to OpenAI for programming, or I'm toying with the idea of buying one of these Sparks.
A computer, is that a computer designed to run LLMs?
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Is Spark it, computer?
Who is it? I forget who it is.
Is it Dell?
Yeah, that's what it is, yeah. Well, it's NVIDIA, isn't it? It's NVIDIA. It's NVIDIA DGX Spark is what it is. It's NVIDIA. I'm so, so, so sorry. It is essentially a huge... Ooh,
those are expensive.
Yes, they are.
It's like the cheapest one I see is $5,000.
Yes.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like if I lost my job, that's what I would do, is I would get an NVIDIA Spark and then use local models to do software design or whatever, so that I'm not paying thousands of dollars to, you know, to OpenAI and Gemini or whatever, right? Because if I went out on my own and was doing, you know, custom stuff, I would need the tokens. But if I could do it on a local thing, then that's all the better, right? So it's like, yeah, okay, it's $5,000, but I wouldn't have to pay $100 a month for,
true,
you know, a pro account, right? So true. What is that?
That's, so eventually that pays itself off. It depends on if you're earning money off of what you're using it for.
That's correct. And it's also way faster, right?
Yeah.
So it's like it's happening locally.
If you're just automating your house, you're not making any money off of it, so...
No, and I run that on this old piece of shit Linux box over here that has a NVIDIA card with like 8 gigs of RAM. But yeah, that's the problem, is it's hard to get RAM. Like I could also do a Mac Mini, right? Which would at least give me 128 gig of unified RAM. But they're backordered through next year, because that's what a lot of people are doing, is they're buying those. So I feel like... you know, I don't know. The Sparks just recently came out, and I feel like we're going to hit a place where they'll come out with the next version of Spark, and then the other ones will become maybe more affordable. You know what I'm saying? Like I might be able to snag one a couple of years from now, like that's less or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening at where I work. It's like, I feel like they still haven't changed my job title or my department or anything like that, but I no longer report to my old manager, and my new manager occasionally talks to me. So it's just kind of like I'm still floating in this kind of weird.
But at least you're closer to what you were doing before, and you're on the correct team for what you actually do.
You would think. So
that's a good start. That's a good start.
Assuming that I'm actually on that team, like it's like they finally this week invited me to the weekly stand-ups or whatever. But I've noticed lately that they're like really way interested in me moving a lot of my code to some of their servers. And which involves doing some rewriting and stuff. And it's fine. I'm all for it, right? But it's like just the questions that my boss is asking are just kind of like, that's a weird question. You know, like...
You're kind of paranoid, though. I mean, he's like kind of paranoid.
He's like, have you had Codex, like, reverse engineer? Did you run a NIT on it and everything? I was like, oh, no, this was completely written by Codex. Like, this is... You know, this is completely rewritten from the original version that I have. And this is, you know, a brand new version that's done there. So yeah, it, you know, there's a README, there's a very simple, you know, it shows exactly how to run it and everything. And I'm just like, why do you care about this stupid little thing that just runs in the background or whatever? But I was like, oh, well, if somebody had to come in and do something because I'm not here anymore, then they would need to have it, which is always good. It's always a good thing. No one should be, you know, expendable or not expendable.
Right? I was going to say, you're not one of those people that tries to hoard knowledge so that you keep your job.
No.
Like, no, I'm not going to share that knowledge with people because that's my secret sauce. That's why they keep me around the company.
No, I don't roll that way. But yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's just weird. I just wish I had a more of a direction as to where things were going to go, right? This guy will say some words that sound good, like, oh yeah, we're gonna do this, you know. But every meeting I have with him, it just kind of feels like instantly dismissed. You know what I'm saying? Like he's not really there. He's just answering, You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
That could very well be Kathy Marshall. He could very well be in over his head. but I feel like, you know, I have a couple of choices, right? Either I need to just ride it out, and when they let me go, they let me go. Or I could be proactive and start looking around somewhere else. I mean, ideally someplace that's really doing something with AI, because that's my biggest frustration with, you know, the company I'm at right now, which is that they're not taking this seriously. Like they're just trying to put numbers on a sheet. Like they're just trying to show productivity gains or whatever with zero thought as to whether it's actually working well or not, right? Or whether it's the tool that we should be using or not, or what the cost of it is, right? All they care about is, you know, we have to show that we're more productive. And, you know, that just leads to them story pointing things higher and like, you know, otherwise gaming the system to try to make it look like they're more productive than they are. And the problem with it is not that we don't have tools that they could use. It's just that we never taught them how to use the damn tools, right? They're just like, they're all, you know, sink or swim. And a lot of them are sinking. And it's kind of like, why are we not trying to set them up to succeed? Like, why are we not, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just,
I do.
It's frustrating to look at because it is, it's just a waste.
Well, I understand the part about you wanting your company to get with, you know, the times technology wise and take it seriously because they're going to be, you kind of see that they're going to be left in the dust if they don't. And so
one of the things,
any other companies that are taking it more seriously are going to, you know, ride the wave, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. What my former manager said to me at one point was, it's going to be a long time before someone could sit down and say, write me an EHR and have a fully functioning EHR. That's not something that's going to happen anytime soon.
You could do that today, somewhat.
Well, that's my answer today is just like, actually, if you have a couple of programmers that have domain knowledge,
have domain knowledge,
it's like, no, you still couldn't sit down and tell Codex to write an EHR or tell Claude to write an EHR, but you could describe what you want it to do. Like if you had that domain knowledge, you could describe, I need, I'm going to have a place that collects the patient charts and the patient chart should have these kind of things on it. And then there should be a place for us to put in their vitals. And we should also, you know, make sure that we can capture that. Like we could go step by step through it and, you know, tweak it, you create an appointment module, an encounter module, a charting module, a billing module, like all that stuff, right? It's like, we're at that point now. We're, you know, that can be done. But a lot of people haven't realized that yet because a lot of people are a year behind, right? They tried to use it to help them code a year ago and it was, it helped something and some, but more often than not, it was just a pain. It just kept suggesting things that you didn't want to do. And so I turned it off, right? It was annoying. I've been writing code for 30 years. I'm going to write code, you know, until I die. And there's a lot of people like that I feel like that because it literally was 5.3 Codex. So what is that? 6 months ago? 6 months ago. It was 6 months ago that
Walmart fully embraced.
Yeah.
I mean, all of the developers are using Codex. Yeah,
what I'm saying is like literally 6 months ago, it changed overnight. And you can read that online over and over again. It's like 5.3 Codex was the moment when that got released. That was the moment that it no longer was just making suggestions. It was actually writing code, full working code, good code. You didn't have to tweak it much at all. And then went to 5.4 where you know, and now 5.5 is like, I can't remember the last time that I even looked at what it wrote.
When it first came out, was Codex a separate company and OpenAI bought them? Because I seem to recall we had a contract with Codex or with the company that had Codex and it was separate from OpenAI and it was mainly being touted as writing unit test cases and doing static analysis. Like, you know what I'm talking about? Like a linter, kind of like that. And it would comment and document your commits with all the checks that it did, yeah, basically.
It still does. OpenAI Codex is an original product developed internally by OpenAI. It was not purchased from another company.
So maybe there was a different one that starts with a C, because I thought there was something we were using from a different company.
Cursor, probably.
Oh, Cursor, maybe.
Yeah.
Could have been.
Yeah, and shithead Musk just bought them for like stupid amounts of money, like $60 million. It's like, it's just a Visual Studio skin. It's just, it's a VS Code skin. But yeah, I would love to have a Spark to play with. That would be super cool. Think of all the things I could do.
Just an admission I have to make.
What?
I have some food on the way.
Oh.
Oops.
Goodbye, everyone.
Nope.
Did I cover everything that I wanted to cover?
Okay.
Oh, Adam.
Oh, God.
you had to go and cut it short because you had to have your Whataburger.
I think I told you that we're getting a Whataburger.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. You did.
I don't know what to do.
What do you mean?
Well,
what
it's
do you
like
mean it, you don't know? It's never technic, eat it? It's or?
No, I'm saying I changed subjects. I was moving on.
Oh.
It's after midnight, so technically it's cheat day.
Okay.
I'm very high, so I shouldn't drive anywhere.
No, you can do delivery. But you have to be up for about another hour, because at this time of night, it'll probably take you at least 30 to 45 minutes to get food.
I mean, there is a Wawa at the entrance to my subdivision. It's about a half mile away. I could just walk up to the Wawa.
You could.
They are open 24 hours, and they have food. I'll put quotation marks around food.
What are you going to get? Are you going to get like a bag of chips? One of those hot dogs that's been rolling on the thing
I get the same thing every time that I go there. So when I go there, there's these little charcuterie trays that they have salami and like a white cheese and crackers. It's cheese and sausage and crackers. It's not really charcuterie. It's not a whole selection, but anyway, I get that.
Yeah.
Sounds
like that's still on your diet.
But the crackers aren't. And then I don't like the crackers that they have in there, but I do love pretzel crisps. So then I get a bag of pretzel crisps and I use those instead of the crackers to do my charcuterie on, or my cheese and my meat on. And then I also get a small bag of the Reese's peanut butter filled pretzel nuggets. Only the Reese's, because they're the best. And so I get pretzel nuggets, pretzel thins, and sausage and cheese. So
this could be our tradition on the after show, is that the way we end it is we talk about what we're going to eat when we get off. What cheap meal we're going to be eating when we end the show. Make everyone hungry. Although Auntie Scott's eating about this time anyway. This is their dinner time.
That's true. Daniel, did you set Big Fatty up with Gail and King? I did. I showed him how to use Notebook LM, yes. And how
there's got to be a way for him to, because they forget who they are.
Yeah.
There's got to be a way for him to tell it in a way.
Yeah.
So that they don't forget who they are. Because one day it'll be, I'm King, I'm Gail. One day it'll be, I'm Gail, I'm King.
Yeah.
They can't remember.
I don't know what his instructions are. Like, if I was instructing it, I would basically be the male voice will be known as King, and the female voice will be known as Gail. Gail should always say howdy instead of hi. Yeah.
Night, Gary. Oh, he already left.
And Gail is racist. Yeah, I haven't listened to those. I do like the Notebook LM thing, but they've pulled all of that into Gemini now. So it's like you have your Notebook LMs directly in Gemini now, which is really nice.
They have all kinds of voices in Gemini.
They do.
And things you can do with it. And now they have a way for you to put emotion in there in like brackets.
Yeah.
And laughter and other things. So you can really make it sound natural.
Yeah. That is true. These are things that they have talked about on the internet. All right. Well, Adam, have a good night.
You too. Enjoy your charcuterie.
I don't know what that involves me.
Wawa cooterie.
That involves me walking up to the Wawa and back.
That'll burn some of the calories.
The question is, do I really want to?
Is it safe?
Well, yeah, of course it's safe.
Okay.
Do you think our neighborhood's unsafe?
No. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the crime's like in your neighborhood.
There's a street light every 15 feet or whatever. So it's lit the entire way there. It's not like I'm walking through the dark.
Yeah, true.
There's a sidewalk. I run on it 3 days a week. So it's like I'm familiar with the sidewalk, the path to get there. So, all right. Have a good night, Adam. Enjoy your food.
You too. Good night, chat room.
Good night, chat room. We'll see you next week.
We'll talk to you later.
Good night.